welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, it's a different feeling. It's a different conversation when you're trying to have a dialogue and a conversation without talking about the news points of the day. I was saying before we went on the air, as I was scouring all of these different sites this morning, before I came on the air, I got up at 3:30 and I'm looking and I'm just not. It's not registering.
Well, it was kind of a yawner in terms of a news week. And, you know, if you're looking at it from the standpoint of what do we talk about that's new and significant, well, we've got the Ukrainian war, which is very significant, but we ought to be talking about why it's significant and not what happened in a particular battle in a particular place yesterday. You know, we've got the weather, and the weather here has clearly been significant, but what we ought to be talking about from the standpoint of our children's interests or whatever is what's happening to the weather generally, and are we doing enough about that, if in fact mankind has something to do with it. And if we're looking at who shot John yesterday in Milwaukee metro area, we ought to be talking about what it is we can do about that, rather than just looking at the identities of who shot John and John. So, you know, to me, our news is a rearview mirror that gets people interested enough, apparently, to listen to the radio and watch TV. But does it really jiggle our brain enough to make us think about where we ought to be headed? Or does it just anger us and make it impossible for us to get together and talk about that?
So you and I know that what you're attempting to do with this conversation is changing the narrative about discussions. And we also know that may never happen in the time that you and I have left. But it has to start somewhere, and at the end of that rainbow, young guys like Connor, and you know, and your grandchildren can see and have a different life than where we're headed now. Because we're headed now is come on, anybody who sees where we are headed now knows that our nation is in deep trouble, and internally. And I don't care whether it's Democrat or Republican, we know that this, where we are right now, is not good for the people of our nation, be they Democrat or Republicans. And that's got to be repaired.
Yeah, and you know, if we, you know, the problem is that now we have callers who have things that they think are important that they want to talk about, or we have conversations with people. But what we ought to be doing is what the pedantic, the instructor would in a course. If you were starting a course in public policy, you'd get all done saying that, and then the question to you is, but why is that important, and what should we be doing about that, and what would you recommend would be the alternative that ought to be adopted? And instead of saying, well, we ought to elect Donald Trump, which isn't an answer. We ought to say, what policy is it that you would like to see pursued to solve which problem? You know, we ought to be talking about that. In that case, we would have to isolate what are the problems we're focused on, and then what are the solutions to the problems. Then we could get somewhere. But until we get there, all we've got is a food fight over who should be chairman, who should hold the gavel at the end of the table while we have our food fight.
Let's go to Dave from Mequon. Dave?
Yeah, good morning again. So really quickly, you know, I agree with a lot of the sentiment that's been stated, you know, earlier here. However, you know, when you have 330-some-odd million people, there's always going to be, and like Connor said, it's always, you know, what is the, when you have the policy in place, is that the real intention? And unfortunately, as you know, some people have bad intentions. And we have to be realistic with that. So that's one thing that I would put as a cursor out there, is that you have to realize that some people do have very bad intentions, They're not looking out for they don't have the empathy that Connor was speaking of. And at the end of the day, I think we have to do as best we can on a local level first and then progress. I think you can't go big like all at once. We have to focus on, okay, what do we do? Because the reason why I say that is I'm president of an association where I live in. And, you know, does everyone agree with me? No. I can get maybe about 85-90%, but there's still 10% that don't agree with me on anything. So the question is, you know, you do the best that you can, and hopefully, it's at a point where most people are happy with things. And right now, and you pointed out, Earl, is that I think both Republican and Democrat are not happy with the trajectory of where we're going. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's been broken now for quite a long time. And how do we fix, the broken pieces and put it back together to make it work for most people? Is it going to work for everybody? No, that's never going to be the case. We can try the best we can, but there's always going to be some people, unfortunately, they have bad intentions, and you're going to have some bad outcomes.
It's worth the effort. Okay.
Yeah, and we have to hold the people that we elect, or even that point. I mean, we have to hold more people accountable for their actions too.
If they are bad,
we have to hold them accountable.
How do we stop the food fight, Dave? How do we get people at the table? You know, I think, and even in a big family, everyone in the family isn't. There's always some disgruntled family members, but you're at least you're operating under the premise of trying to make the operate for the family's best interests, and so, but right now we've got a problem in that we can't even have that conversation. Number one, I don't think we have everyone buying in to just the fact that we've got a super big family. I think there's lots of talk that's at least subconscious about just a part of the family. And we point at other parts of the family and say, why don't they get their act together?
Right. Well, keep in mind, we are the melting pot of the world. So we have a lot of different ideas, cultures, a lot of different ideas. And because of that, that's where... it's messy. And what I mean by messy is that, do I agree with everything that you guys say? No, but do I try to do it in a way as far as a constructive argument? I try. Am I going to, maybe swing you guys one way or the other? Probably not. But at the end of the day, we have to have, and one thing with like Earl's show, I will say this, is that having diverse opinions, I think, is a good thing, because that helps kind of close the gap as far as, what is important to each individual, whereas other places you call on the radio, it does not happen. It's one track, one mind, and unfortunately, that's a problem.
Hang on, Dave, because I'm going to try something else different. I'm going to try to keep all these voices on the lines and juggle them all and let everybody respond. Let's go to KJ from Milwaukee. KJ, what do you say?
Well, first of all, let me go on record. Apparently, as someone who completely 100% disagrees with your assessment that we're headed in the wrong direction, we've got all these great problems. You're not Chicken Little. The sky is not falling. Most things in our lives, when you look at the last 10, 20, 30 years, have gotten better, not worse. There are plenty of jobs out there for anybody who wants to work, for example. The economy is growing, even though it's not growing
whether there are more jobs. It's the quality of the jobs. Okay.
I'm giving you examples of why things are better.
Okay.
Okay. Most people back in the 60s didn't have air conditioning. Now, most cars and buildings have air conditioning. All of these things have come about and made life better for all of us, including those who are poor. And I would point out we have a very mobile society. Those who start out poor, in most cases, do not stay poor. Many go on to the very top. If you look at the top of the Forbes 100 or 400 list, most of them people are self-made people. They are not people who inherited wealth, like Jeff Bezos, who started Amazon in his garage somewhere and went on to the heights he is at now. Most things are getting better, not worse, and things look good. You know, Billy Joel has a song.
KJ, slow down just a minute. Just a couple of questions, because we're talking about the condition, and we're here we are sitting around the family table trying to figure out whether there's things we need to worry about. One of the things we talked about as being a primary essential is health care, and we've got sitting around the table, it turns out that the median income family sitting around the table is $75,000, and they have both parents working in that family, and they can't afford health care insurance. And they don't qualify for Medicaid because they're earning too much money. And so what they have is a fear of getting sick and an inability to go to the doctor and a prayer every night that they don't get ill. And aren't you worried about those people? Because incidentally, the healthcare system and the access to the healthcare system has gotten worse since 1970. In 1970, when we went to work, our place of employment provided us with Blue Cross Blue Shield health care insurance, and we were covered, and we didn't worry about it, and there was no discussion whatsoever in the political environment about health care because it was in fact accessible, and Blue Cross Blue Shield was accessible because in fact it had a huge pool of insured, all of those employed by large employers, and if you were self-employed, you could go out and buy Blue Cross Blue Shield, and it wasn't expensive. It's way different today. So would you agree that we've got an issue associated with access to health care?
Well, of course we have a issue, but I disagree with your assertion that it's not accessible. Most people in this country right now have insurance of one kind or another and do have access to the health care system.
KJ,
over
KJ,
85%
wait.
Of the people in this country have insurance.
KJ, slow
most
down.
Most people
slow down
do.
A slow down
a clear
minute.
Majority.
There's different kinds of insurance, but the people who have lower incomes who have insurance tend to have insurance which has a $5,000 deductible and has a $5,000 or $6,000 annual premium. Or $7,000, which means they will have to spend $10,000 before they get a dollar of insurance, and which means that actually they don't go to the doctor.
So,
so
hang on. Tom, Dave, KJ, we'll try this. So hang on the lines. We'll be coming to each one of you. Be right back. The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Again, we're doing something different. To me, that's what radio is about, you know, and so we'll try this. We're going to keep Dave, Tom, KJ on with us for the remainder of the show, and Sandy, who's come up with this plan and idea. Let's go. Let me ask you, Sandy, you want to respond to KJ before we go to Tom? Okay.
Identify a problem, but I think what we ought to do is now we're all sitting around the table. We've got this family discussion. Let's
that's
move
right.
on.
Let's go to Tom. All right, Tom from LA. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
All right. Well, first off, as a past Scots Knight, I'd like to acknowledge Dave for opening his mind up much more than he had in the past, and it's really made a difference in the table to have this conversation at the table. Well, thank you, Brother Dave. I appreciate that. Second, that's one of the reasons why I propose that on every one of our paychecks, we have an itemized of where our tax dollars are actually going. So we, the people, everyone in the family gets their little tax receipt, and it actually shows how much of this went to this, how much of this went to that, how much of this went to this. And the thing is, it's really sad when we are giving more money to either have politicians run elections or for the billionaire class to get a very pay more taxes than I do as an average middle-class, upper-class person. And like I've said before, I'm much closer to the income, even making over $100,000, much closer to the income of the homeless person on the street than I am to my brother that's the billionaire. So I don't, you know, understand this whole idea of everyone's self-made. Well, no, not really, because self-made means that you would have not taken anything from the government. And that includes even contracts and ways of even running your business and things like that. So, and I believe Jeff Bezos' family is pretty rich, actually. So all I'm saying is that, again, at this dinner table that we're having, we can, I think we can all agree that, you know, money and politics is at the root problem of this thing. And second is really money and media, because the media's got to be able to put commercials on. And like Earl said, they had commercials on that had to be paid for. So they're not going to have to vote money and politics.
Yes.
Again, I just want to get back to the basic. Who is this money that we're paying into the coffers for?
Hey, Tom.
Is it for we the people?
Tom, okay. Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, yeah, I think what you're saying, Tom, is that money in politics is keeping us from being able to address, from the standpoint of the family interest, what the proper priorities for the expenditure of our total fund of money ought to be, and how much we ought to be asking various family members to contribute to the overall family enterprise. And you're right, I think, that money in politics is warping that discussion and constraining that discussion and constraining the thinking so that we never even get there. You know, because all we have to do is look at how we actually spend our money, and then we should be talking about how we all think we should be spending the money, and we'll see that there's quite a big delta, quite a big difference between those. Us too.
Dave?
And Sandy.
Oh, Tom, hang on. Dave, go ahead.
I like to thank Tom for the acknowledgement and trying to have constructive dialogue. And
all right.
I think it's important, like I said,
Kumbaya has occurred.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
To answer a KJ point, yes, there have definitely been improvements. And he is correct that as far as what we have today, what's available to the average person is certainly a lot better than what was a long time ago. That being said, you know, I would say this to you, Sandy. You know, we have made a lot of strides in the medical field, and it costs big money to have these new machines and technologies, and there's a price for that. So that's one of the reasons why it's gone up exponentially, because we do have a lot of advancement. The flip side is, the majority of people in the country are on Medicare and Medicaid. The problem is the subsidies for the Obamacare Affordable Care Act, ACA, you definitely can get the cost down with the subsidy. But if you, again, the government will put a certain limit. If you cross that limit, just like they did with the student loan, a lot of people are lost through the cracks, and that's where we get into trouble.
So let me chime in here, because I want to challenge the premise of KJ saying, yeah, the insurance is, you know, it's better and more people have it. You know, 38% of people were in unions mm-hmm. at the height and had insurance coverage, quality insurance coverage. That now is down to 7% public unions and 10% total with governmental unions. It's insurance is not better, and access to insurance is not better today than it was 40 years ago. or 35 years ago, because people had jobs that offered them insurance coverage, Sandy, which is what you were saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was the playing field was different back in the 70s when the middle class was much larger and they were employed in middle class jobs with institutions and there was health care coverage. It is true that the Affordable Care Act has gotten, I think, 14 million people insured who weren't insured before.
Yeah, but $5,000 a person deductible.
Yeah, but the problem is that without the mandate that people be insured, the insurance pools have had to transfer this expense that Dave talked about directly to the insured, and so it's not working. It's not working to provide comfortable health care coverage. And KJ, I just think you need to talk to a broad range of people to realize how many people are living one paycheck to paycheck, afraid that they can't cover their next bill. They are working, so they're in the workforce. And two, they're afraid that they could get sick because they can't afford the health care coverage for they or their family. The implication of getting sick is too expensive.
So guys, KJ, I give you a chance on the other side to respond. Dave, Tom, KJ, Sandy, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And the one thing you can certainly say about the Earl Ingram Show is you never know what you're going to get. So, Sandy, you came up with this idea. And before we... let's give KJ a chance to respond. KJ?
Let's reiterate that things have gotten better. You know, the old Billy Joel song, you know, we didn't start the fire.
Things have gotten better for some. Okay, so.
No, well, for most. I mean, certainly it has gotten better for most. Obviously, since throughout history, you can look at
I
can't even get two sentences in.
If things have gotten better for most, why are people in the rural areas disagreeing with you and the MAGA people and people in cities when you say that things have gotten better?
Well, first of all, I don't think you're a spokesman for rural people or the MAGA people. I'm just giving you facts of life. Look at cancer survivor rates, which have gone up. Life expectancy has gone up. A friend of mine recently got both knees replaced. He was back up and walking within a month or two. These are advancements in medical care.
If you can't afford both knees replaced, KJ.
Okay, so you're acknowledging that things have gotten better, but now there's an affordability issue.
KJ, just...
You're arguing about an affordability issue.
Well, KJ, I mean, that's right. We're talking about access. So I don't disagree with you that healthcare has gotten more sophisticated. And as David's pointed out, some of those sophisticated healthcare procedures are very, very expensive. But, you know, and there's other reasons things have gotten better. You can buy a very large flat screen TV to hang on your wall for a fraction of what you paid for a much less, for an inferior
black and white back in the day. I'm old enough to remember that.
Okay. Well, the reason for that, KJ, is globalization. And so, you know, there's a mixed blessing for some of these things, and they didn't all come with benefits for everyone. They came only for benefits for the people who could afford it. Globalization has allowed people with less income to afford more things. And so if we're going to measure that way, and when we talk as a family, though, we're talking about access to daycare, we're talking about access to childhood education, we're talking about access to health care, we're talking about access to, not the quality that you can get if you can afford it. We're talking about whether we can get it so that we can afford it. And so I was just trying to channel a conversation in that direction. And it does require, however, that we all decide that we're part of that family. Kate, how do you feel about that, KJ? Do you feel that we should think of things as one big family, so that we're as worried about the families on the north side as we are on the south side or the west side?
Well, you've certainly jumped into a much broader conversation, and I'd say
That's what we've been on. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, we've been talking about
this. Well, I've been listening to the show. I'd argue again, we are a part of the big family here in America, and most people think of that. Think of a husband and wife. They don't agree on everything. Think of a family. I got seven in my family, plus mom and dad. We don't agree on everything. And then you're part of the family that of the city you live in, the neighborhood you live in, the state you live in, and ultimately you get to the big family of the country I'm in, my fellow Americans, many of whom I disagree with, and ultimately, yes, I'm part of this big family called the human population or the human race, there which is worldwide. All of those things are part of it, but family has a lot of disagreements. Sometimes they result in bitter disagreements. We had a vicious civil war about a disagreement we had in our American family, the issue of slavery,
we killed each other over it.
Unfortunately, the good guys won that.
No question that families can have disagreements. The question is, as a family, as we plan for the future, how do we want to prioritize? What do we think are the most important objectives for our family? And we were talking about some of the basics.
We've had discussion every day on an ongoing basis. For you to talk as if we don't, I think you're missing the boat here. Look at the invasion of Iraq by George Bush Jr., which was a complete disaster. But we did have a debate on it in Congress. We voted on it in Congress, and he won that vote, in case you missed it. Now, I know there's a lot of people looking back now saying what an awful mistake it was. And they're true. But we did have the debate.
Hodo stoppo, as Archie Bunker would say.
Stop! I can't even get a sentence without you guys jumping in.
Stoppo.
Well, I would say you're long-winded, KJ. You've got really good VO max, as the coaches would say.
I'm trying to put in facts. I'm trying to put in facts.
Well, breathe. But what we're trying to do, and you know,
is have a conversation.
We're trying to have a conversation about what the people want the politicians to do, not what the politicians have done. Because what the politicians have done can be measured by their conduct. And the question is, does their conduct square with what the priorities would be if we looked at things from the broad family perspective? And Congress is not the family. Congress would only be at best proxies for representing the family, and they don't do a very good job of it. And I think others have pointed out why. I think that Tom from Los Angeles points out regularly, and I agree with him, that money in politics and other elements that affect politicians' thinking has kept them from prioritizing the conduct of government to the priorities that would reflect the priorities of our family.
And let's do this. Let's bring in CJ. CJ.
Thank you, Earl.
All right.
And Sandy.
What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, it frustrates me because there seems to be two tiers of, I guess, discipline for this family. And the rules, we pick and choose which rules we're going to follow now. And I want all the rules followed. And I want to be disciplined the way my brother's disciplined. And I don't see that in the way our country acts now. So this family picks and chooses their favorites and picks and chooses whose punishment or rewards are given. And, you know,
that's a true statement, CJ. That's a true statement.
And it is. It's frustrating. And I hear you guys, you know, we've debated over many weeks and months and whatever, but it's frustrating when you don't see people treated the same regardless of where they come from, what money they have, and what power they have.
So CJ, you are absolutely correct. And so imagine being a black person in this country.
In the family.
Yeah. And having to deal with the things that people deal with. And you just explained it so succinctly why things are not fair and just and proper.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, to put myself in the position of a black person, you know, this country has more opportunities for people than anywhere in the world. And there's some people that take advantage of it. And there's some people that, yes, have issues. They're facing them through their own family. And, you know, but there are opportunities here if people take advantage of them.
Are they fair and just and equitable is the question.
I think there's possibilities of working that way, but you're right. I think there are injustices, and I think there's some groups that have power that want to keep people down and keep people dependent on the government. And I think that is a real issue that I believe the Democrat Party is facing, because they've kept people down.
CJ, you're the first one who brought in Democrat or Republican. We've tried to keep the conversation. CJ, we tried to keep the conversation away from Democrat and Republican.
I apologize, but I've watched it for years, and that's probably my biggest issue. Why do you keep voting for the people that keep your people down, dependent on the government?
Hey, CJ,
why?
We've been talking about
CJ, let's talk about some of the things. When we talked about child care, the child care that would be available to everyone, okay? Daycare that would be available to everyone. Because the fact is that black households, white households, the general phenomena now is that both parents work in a household. And with both households, with both parents working in a household, you need daycare. But the government isn't providing daycare in our country, but it does provide daycare in almost every other country. And some of the reasons for the problems that have been identified in, for instance, the black community, if both parents are working, but they only qualify for minimum wage jobs, the minimum wage doesn't match the cost of daycare, and so they end up being it's impossible for them to have both parents working and accomplishing daycare without the government providing it. And so we have a problem associated in our country that might be spawned by the government, but I wouldn't assert that it was willfully spawned by the government to make these people dependent on government. Do you think a person is less dependent on government if they are working and send their child to a government-provided daycare? Would you call that dependent on the government?
And the answer can be, don't have children.
Well, that certainly is an answer, but I think if people are adults and they're trying to make it on minimum wage income, they should have started working earlier, and they should have worked harder at their education. So there are trades out there that people with not great education can get a high school education, and I got to admit, I'm one of these people that I went into the trades. I worked for 30 plus years in the trades, and I made great money, but I worked my butt off.
Sure you did, CJ.
I wasn't dependent on the government to pay for my kids' health care.
I know, but
have to be dependent on the government, Sandy.
Okay, all right. Well, you're saying that if you've pulled yourselves up by your bootstraps, but let's just take your example. You went into the trades 30 years ago. You were trained, I'll bet you, in a guild through a union, weren't you?
No, I didn't start with the union.
Okay.
No.
How did you get your initial training for your trade job?
I worked in the farm. I worked on farms as a kid.
Yeah.
And I learned mechanics.
Yeah.
And industrial stuff.
Hey, okay. And then your first job, did they train you on the job?
Yes.
Somewhat, yeah.
Yes, yeah, of course they did. Okay, well, you understand that these conditions...
But I started out minimum wage, Sandy, and I worked my way up.
Sandy, yeah.
I'm not arguing with you, CJ. I understand that. I'm just saying that conditions in the labor market have changed quite a bit since you entered it and since I entered it, and they.
I don't think they have.
Okay.
Well,
I
you don't.
Think
they have. The operative word is, and CJ, you don't think they have. Okay.
Well,
that's your thought.
Now, it is true.
Every girl should have to work on a farm for a summer if you want to find out what good hard working is.
Well,
unfortunately, we don't have kids that are willing to do that anymore because mommy and daddy give them money and they're dependent on the government. They're entitled. I'm so sick of this entitlement crap that people.
Okay, CJ.
CJ, we got your point.
We got others on the line. When we come back.
Thank you, guys.
No, hang on. We got to go to a break. Okay. When we come back, Dave, we'll give you a shot. And KJ, I still see you. We're talking about trades. I know you're salivating. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. Go right back to the phone lines. Dave from Mequon, your turn.
So, like TJ just said, there's definitely some truth to what he's saying. And how do we know this? If you go into the rural areas.
What part of what he's saying, Dave?
As far as the people not going into trades, making good money, you see signs placed all over the place throughout the state. It could be Sargento Cheese, it could be Johnsonville Brat, it could be the Toro facility up in Plymouth, and I think it was in Franklin. Franklin in the city of Milwaukee, they're willing to pay people a CDL license. Along with the bonus plus $22, $23 an hour just for part-time work. And the thing is, there's still shortages or people are not going into that.
No, wait, Dave, this is Sandy. I do think that both CJ and you are right that there are lots of jobs available right now. The job market mm-hmm. would tell you that. There's advertisements on the radio for heavy equipment training because there's such a shortage in the construction industry. But the real question we have to address is, what is the social problem involved with the disconnect between the availability of jobs and the people who are currently suffering either...
Correct. In right. Milwaukee.
Well, so,
people
so,
are in Milwaukee.
Is,
the jobs that they're offering are not in Milwaukee.
Well, so this would be a solution to that. We have to do a better job taking the current transit system that we have, where you're not seeing that many people riding the Milwaukee County bus system because a lot of office workers are not going to the office. I'll turn it off. Sorry. Hang on. Turn it off. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the other thing is we have to cut, like my wife wanted to go into cosmetology, and you have to spend a fortune to get a license to be a nail technician or a barber, a tremendous amount of money. So and interior designer, same thing. So we have to cut. I think some people want to get into some of these professions, but it costs a lot of money for a person that wants to open up their own shop. We're hitting them over the head with all these
hours that you have to do, and you know, money and what have you. We need to streamline that process.
This is really good stuff. I do think, though, what you're saying is that the government, that there are some functions that government needs to provide to do this, so that instead of saying we should shrink government and spend less on it, you're saying we should at least have government making the investments that would help accomplish this, right?
No, what I'm saying is you still have government involved. What I'm saying is sometimes they got too much red tape involved, and the cost, like I said, to get your license to, let's say, be a cosmetologist or to be an interior designer.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about connecting, having transit go where it ought to go, and finding different ways, having different ways to make to break down the barriers between those who don't have jobs and where the jobs are.
Yes. So I think the county, Milwaukee County in particular, everyone's talking about how ridership has gone down exponentially, and obviously COVID was a huge factor in that. But I think we have to take that mindset and say, okay, if the jobs are not in Milwaukee County or in the central city, which obviously, to Earl's point, he's always stated that, then we have to look and expand that how do we get these people to these particular locations?
So Dave, the new county executive has done just that, and there are buses that are now
going to Waukesha. Oh,
that's correct. So let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Bill, you're up quickly.
I heard CJ on before, and he was talking about entitlements, and I believe he was referring to the student loans, correct?
He didn't say what, but go ahead
and say.
Okay, but on the entitlements, what I don't understand, I understand people don't like entitlements, but when you structure our tax code, so if you make, say, if you're a multimillionaire with that kind of income, you can get away from almost paying zero taxes. If that's not entitlement, I don't know what is. And then I've got one other topic that should make you very happy, Earl. I'm talking about more concealed carry qualifications for Wisconsin residents, and the concealed carry, some of them like it. This is how it would go. You know, minimum of 40 hours of classwork every year to maintain your license. You need a license and insurance, and then you're good to go. Because we got to stop this. When our state tests you harder to kill a deer, 2 weeks to kill a deer, 3 hours to kill a person, that makes no sense to anybody.
Hey, Bill,
thank you
very much for the call. KJ, quickly.
Get to the family paying job, you have to start at the beginning, which is usually mean the bottom. That's where the apprenticeships are. When I started my apprenticeship in the trade, I made a whopping $6 an hour. Now the apprentices start out at $20 an hour. Most jobs, even at McDonald's, will start you at $15 an hour. I point out that that's more than twice the wage of the federal minimum wage. So if you want to get to these higher end jobs, then you have to start at the beginning. And I point out the reason these lower paying jobs are not filled is because people have left them and moved to higher paying jobs.
Wait.
You need that work experience to move up.
KJ, there is this about the union job, the union training, is there's a promise that at the end of the training you're going to step into the union pay scale. And I don't know what year that you were earning the 670, but I think if we applied the consumer price index to that and figured out what it would be today if it had raised commensurately, we'd find out that it was right up at the level you were describing for the current start. But in any case, you know, you're to be commended, and you're right. But the world has changed. The number of union training jobs and the size of the unions has shrunk dramatically since you started. And so, you know, there's some work to be done out there. As we sit at the family table, we can talk about some of that stuff, I think. That you're right.
Well, thanks for inviting me to the table. I'd like to say that.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, CJ. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Sandy. Thanks for everybody who made the show go. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you all later.